Cordell had dodged a lot of lawmen in his time. He knew how. He was confident they wouldn't expect him to turn back toward town, so that was what he did. He entered the creek and followed it downstream several hundred yards. He felt that the two horsemen he had seen trailing after him would decide he was the most likely to go upstream, for his best hope of escape lay to the west. Leaving the creek, he saw no sign of pursuit. He indulged in a moment of pride for his ability to outwit the law. He speculated that perhaps in some previous life he had been a coyote. He had that devious animal's instincts. Cordell stayed within cover and observed Shanty's cabin for some time before he ventured into the open. He found Buster's bridle where he had left it hanging in a tree. The saddle lay across a shoulder-high branch, out of the wild hog's reach. Buster's horse grazed where he had been staked, near the edge of the river. Cordell caught hold of the animal, saddled it, and led him to the cabin. Shanty's mule followed. Shanty came out and shaded his eyes with his hand.
All right there, boy, hush up.
How's my boy? He doing any better?
Yeah, he's still feverish and hurting the right smart. Can't get him to take no nourishment.
Well, I'm obliged to you for seeing after him. You been anybody snooping around?
Ain't been a soul come by. Ain't many folks bothers with old Shanty.
Well, I'm fixing to take him off your hands.
He ought not to be riding.
I wished I could leave him longer, but there's folks in that town as anxious to see me and Buster. We ain't anxious to see them.
In the cabin, Cordell laid the palm of his hand against the wounded man's forehead. Shanty had been right. Buster was fevered more than before.
Come on now, ain't you ready to get out of bed and do some traveling? Laying around sap a man's energy.
Buster raised up on one elbow, his face twisting in pain.
I've been worried you wouldn't come back.
Oh, you ought to know I wouldn't go off and leave a partner. Not when I owe him his split. I got our property back, huh?
Buster was wearing his trousers, but not his shirt and boots. Shanty brought him the shirt. He had washed the blood from it and had done a fair job of patching the hole where the bullet had gone in.
I've been telling your friend he ought to go on and let you stay here.
Don't leave me. I'm afraid.
I ain't leaving you. Soon as it's safe, I get you to a sure enough damn doctor. He fix you up better than you was before.
Cordell knew it was likely that his description had been sent out in all directions. His black beard and shaggy hair would give him away to anybody who was paying attention.
Shanty, you got some scissors and a razor? I'd like to get rid of this briar patch. I wouldn't be surprised to see a sparrow come flying out of it.
He trimmed off most of the beard with the scissors, then lathered and shaved the rest. He was surprised by the clean face that looked back at him from Shanty's cracked mirror. He'd not seen it in a long time, but then neither had anybody else. Years ago, women had told him he was handsome. He doubted they would say that now. His jaw seemed more square than he remembered, and the face showed lines that reminded him of an irrigation ditch. The beard had probably been an improvement.
Damn, I got ugly as hell. But a man don't have to be good-looking if he got money. I better shed some of this long hair, too.
Well, I ain't no barber, but I'll see what I can do.
When Shanty finished with the scissors, there seemed to be enough hair and beard on the floor to stuff a pillow. Cordell surveyed the results in the mirror.
Ooh, you right, you ain't no barber. But it sure do change my looks. Well, we better be traveling, boy.
He helped Buster to his feet and supported him through the door. Cordell gave Buster a boost up into the saddle.
Now you think you can hang on?
I ain't gonna fall off.
Buster steadied himself on the saddle horn.
Oh, we owe Shanty something.
Cordell reached into a saddlebag and drew out several bills. Shanty shook his head.
I ain't asking for money. The Lord would be ashamed of me if I didn't do all I could for a sick boy.
Nah, this is just for the victuals me and Buster ate. And you apt to need a new razor, because I think I ruined yours.
Cordell thrust the money into Shanty's hand and climbed into the saddle.
Now don't worry about the Lord. He smile on you for what you done.
Shanty nodded gravely.
He already has. I just hope he smiles on that boy.
Now, looky here, you might not want to watch us leave. If anybody asks, you can tell them it sounded like we rode south, huh?
Cordell headed west. Buster trailed behind him, cramped in pain. Cordell regretted the necessity, but they had to keep moving. The law might not be alone and looking for them. Milt Hayward might be looking, too. It would be his style to ambush and kill the two of them, then take the money, all of it. Still hurting, Andy had no patience for listening to Farley run him down. He trailed behind Farley and Speck as they rode into town at dusk and reined up at the jail.
I'll take these horses over to the wagon yard.
That suited Andy. More than anything else, he wanted to get to his bunk and lie down. It would feel good, despite being hard as stone. Andy staggered inside and made his way toward the open cell in which he'd slept before.
Looks like you hunters came home without no quail.
A long, lanky figure unwound from the chair at the sheriff's desk.
Len?
Len Tanner?
Well, if you was looking for Sam Houston, he died. I come in his place.
Andy gladly grasped the ranger's hand. For a man who seemed too thin to cast a shadow, Len had a grip like a blacksmith. Len saw the mark on Andy's head.
Looks like somebody went and pistol-whipped you. Cordell?
I'm ashamed to say it was Fowler Gaskin. Hit me with a chunk of firewood.
Ain't that old buzzard dead yet? I thought by now somebody would have put him out of his misery.
Len turned to Farley for the first time, and without enthusiasm.
I see you ain't got no handsomer. Ain't that little Mexican woman of yours run you off yet?
Half Mexican. Nobody's been run off except Badger Boy.
Andy would explain to Len some other time.
How come you're here?
Captain sent me to pick up Cordell and take him back. Seeing as he's not in the jailhouse and you didn't bring him in, I have to figure he's on the loose.
Andy could only nod. Len took a small book from his pocket and flipped through its pages. Andy recognized it as a ranger's fugitive list. He carried one himself during his time of service.
There was three of them hit that bank. Except for Cordell, we don't have enough description to find the other two in here.
Speck told us Cordell called out a name that sounded like Milk.
That don't make a lick of sense.
That's all we've got. What about the kid that was with them?
Cordell probably picked him up somewhere along the way. There ain't no telling who he might be.
I hit him as he was bringing the horses up, but he managed to ride away. There wasn't any kid with him at Gaskin's place. Maybe the kid died of his wound, or Cordell found some place to put him. Cordell got the drop on me and Fowler when the old man wouldn't give up the saddlebags. I was pulling him away from Gaskin when he brained me with a chunk of wood. Next thing I knew, I'm looking up from the ground, and Cordell had the muzzle of his gun on Gaskin's throat. He said it was his partner that shot Tom. I don't know whether to believe him or not.
Cordell has got most of a page in the fugitive book. I'd put money on him unless I heard otherwise.
Whichever one pulled the trigger, they're all guilty. I'm afraid by morning they'll be out of the county. I've got no legal authority to go farther than that.
Yes, you do. Judge Tompkins told me he got a wire from the state office. They approved your reinstatement. You're a ranger again.
Farley had listened with a frown.
That won't set well with Bethel. Maybe now she'll come to her senses and look for a better man.
Farley would be eager to help her do that.
I hope she understands. But even if she doesn't, I've got to do all I can to catch the people that killed Tom.
Damn shame about that. He was as square a man as I ever knew.
Tanner moved toward the door.
I'm about ready for some supper. Ain't had a bite since noon. State of Texas is buying.
Andy removed the badge Judge Tompkins had given him.
I won't need this anymore.
He handed it over to Farley. Farley glanced at the lettering.
You think this county could afford its own badges?
Farley started to pin it to his shirt, but changed his mind.
I wonder where Tom's is.
They'll bury him with it.
I'd rather have my own anyway.
Farley tossed the deputy badge at the desk. When it missed, he didn't stoop to pick it up. Andy stepped to the door to go to supper with Len, but Farley stayed back. Len had a reputation for conversation that stopped only when he went to sleep, and not always then. It had driven Farley to distraction when they worked together as rangers.
I'll eat later. I don't aim to have Tanner talk both my ears off.
Rusty Shannon entered the restaurant while Andy and Len awaited their supper. Face grim, he howdied and shook hands with Len, but had little to say.
How is Mrs. Blessing?
Alice is with her. So are several of her neighbors. Doc Smith gave her something to make her sleep.
Rusty's face twisted in grief.
I've got to stay here and help with the funeral. Lynn, you and Andy go get him.
Andy hoped everyone would understand why he couldn't stay for the funeral.
We'll get them if we have to follow them to the moon.
I wasn't authorized to go on a chase. They just told me to get Cordell and take him to Galveston. Maybe we can catch him before the main office starts worrying about me not showing up.
Next morning, Andy, Len, and Farley left Speck in charge of the jail. Leading a pack mule with supplies enough for several days, they were at Gaskin's cabin a while after daylight. Len had talked all the way, recounting what he had been doing since he, Andy, and Farley served together on the Rio Grande. The old man met them at the door in his underwear. His droopy eyes said he was still half asleep.
I hope y'all are here to help me straighten up my place. It's your fault's in this shape.
It's been in this shape ever since I first saw it.
Len spent a lot of time at Rusty Shannon's between ranger missions, so he'd known Gaskin for years. Squinting hard, Gaskin recognized him.
Old Never Hush. You still a ranger?
It's all I know to be.
I hope you're half as good at rangering as you are at jawing.
I don't say nothing that ain't the gospel truth. That's more than I can say for some folks.
Andy pointed in the direction Cordell took in leaving. Len studied the trail and gave Farley a critical look.
Don't you know better than to mess up a fugitive's tracks? I can't tell what's yours and what was left by Cordell.
We're wasting time here. I can show you where me and Speck lost the trail.
They pushed into an easy lope until they came to a creek.
Now here's where we found Andy's horse and Gaskin's mule. Cordell rode in, but he never rode out.
He must have, unless he drowned. Did you follow the creek upstream?
Couple of miles. You wouldn't think he could come out without leaving sign, but I guess he did.
How far did you ride downstream?
A couple hundred yards. He wouldn't have gone that way. Take him back toward town.
That's just what he might figure you'd figure. So like as not, he figured to fool you. Let's go downstream.
They traveled more than 2 miles before Len found where Cordell left the creek. He gave Farley a grin that silently said, "I told you." He rode out onto the bank, pausing to study the tracks.
I see a cabin.
Andy was suddenly fearful.
That's Shanty's place. I hope he didn't hurt that old man.
Andy put his horse into a long trot. Len caught up with him.
Cordell might steal the pennies from a dead man's eyes, but I doubt he'd hurt a harmless old darky. Probably just looking for something to eat.
Shanty wouldn't have much to spare. It was a hard winter.
The tracks led almost directly to Shanty's, though they detoured to a thicket. They indicated that Cordell had paused there, probably watching to be sure no outsiders were around. Shanty was near the shed, feeding grain to his small flock of chickens. He tossed handfuls onto the ground. Shanty didn't hear the horses until they were close by. It startled him.
Are you all right?
Shanty stared in surprised silence before greeting his company. He usually glowed when anyone came to visit. He seemed ill at ease.
Andy? Mr. Farley? Mr. Lynn?
We've been trailing a wanted man. Tracks show he came this way. Have you seen anybody?
What name does he go by?
He answers to Cordell.
There was a fella come by here. That might have been his name. Yes, I believe it was.
Was he alone?
A young fella come with him.
Andy was puzzled by Shanty's slowness to answer.
Maybe Cordell made you promise not to tell us anything, but your word to an outlaw don't count. Tom Blessing is dead on account of them.
I didn't know Mr. Tom had died.
Shanty removed his hat and bowed his head.
The boy had a bullet in him. I done what I could for him. Mr. Cordell, he was gone a long time. Then he come back for the boy. Took him away yesterday.
With the boy? What was his name?
Buster was all I heard. I told Mr. Cordell that he'd ought to leave him because the boy was awful weak. Looked fair to die. But he said they was folks in town might hang him on account of Sheriff Tom. He seemed like too nice a boy to get hung.
But not too nice to hold up a bank.
Which way did they go when they left?
I can't rightly say. Mr. Cordell told me to go inside not watch him. Could have gone any which way.
Helping them makes you an accessory. You could go to jail for that.
Andy tried to put words in Shanty's mouth to counter what Farley said.
Cordell held a gun on you, didn't he? I doubt he gave you any choice.
When I see how bad off that boy was, I couldn't say no. Like the book says, you never know when an angel may come to your door unawares.
If you'd been a better shot, Badger Boy, he would have been an angel.
The book says thou shalt not kill. Been a time or two I was tempted, but the Lord stayed my hand.
Shandy turned to look toward his cabin.
I expect they'll be burying Mr. Tom today. I better put on my go-to-meeting clothes. An awful good man he was. A real friend to me.
A few in town might resent a black man's presence at the funeral, but they wouldn't say anything aloud. His friends far outnumbered them. Len rode a wide circle around the cabin and came back. He pointed west.
Tracks of two horses lead off yonder way.
Mr. Cordell left me some money, but I can't rightfully spend it. I wish you'd give it back to them it belongs to.
How do you know that what he gave you was stolen? He might have won it in a card game. You ought to go to town and buy you some groceries with it.
Them groceries would go sour in my mouth.
Then hide it away till we come back. We'll put it with what we take from Cordell when we catch him.
When? Show yourself, ain't you, Badger Boy?
We'll get him. Maybe today, maybe tomorrow, maybe next week. Somebody's got to pay for Tom.
The trail was plain for a while, then became increasingly difficult to follow. Cordell had sought out places where the ground was hard or gravelly.
He's gaining time. We'll lose him.
That wouldn't help your campaign much, would it?
I wasn't thinking about the campaign.
Andy felt certain he was. At length, Farley drew up and took a sweeping look at the ground ahead.
County lines around here somewhere.
They were not on a road where there might have been a marker.
That being the case, I'm at the end of my jurisdiction.
You're fixing to turn back?
I hate to. I purely do. But I got a thing of my responsibility as acting sheriff of this county. Folks will expect me to be where they can reach me if I'm needed.
Besides, if we catch Cordell outside of the county, it'll be the Rangers that get the credit.
I never gave a minute's thought to who gets the credit.
Len offered Farley a graceful way out.
There's no telling how long we may be gone. And that boy Speck didn't strike me as being real pert.
Farley sounded reluctant, but looked relieved.
Right. I wish I could go on with you, but I got a duty here.
Len nodded solemnly.
I'm glad you see it my way.
Farley turned back in the direction of town. The two rangers sat for a moment, watching him ride away.
I'm glad to be shed of his griping. I couldn't hardly get a word in edgeways.
Andy waited until Farley was well beyond earshot before he expressed his doubts.
Cordell has tried several times to make us lose his trail. He'll do it sooner or later. Probably sooner.
All we can do is try our best.
He's liable to spend that money before we catch him.
Len shrugged.
I don't lay awake at night worrying about some Yankee bank. I'm mainly interested in getting Cordell a room and bed at the State Hotel in Huntsville.
Len saw several distinct tracks. He dismounted to observe them closely.
One of the horses has got an odd-shaped hoof, like his foot was twisted a little.
Andy squatted on his heels and studied the track. He was not sure he'd be able to distinguish it if he saw it again, mixed up with other tracks. His Indian training had some gaps in it. Long hours in the saddle wore heavy on Buster. Only his uncertain grip on the horn kept him from sliding off. The kid's horse followed Cordell's, but Buster was too weak to offer guidance. Frequently, Cordell had to stop and let Buster catch up. Much of the time, the kid appeared to be only half-conscious. Cordell saw a small crossroads village ahead. He needed no reminder that the two had had nothing to eat since leaving Shanty's cabin.
Yeah, I don't see no telegraph line, so maybe they ain't heard about us yet. I'll leave you in that grove of trees, yonder, while I go in and get us something to eat. Might buy me a change of clothes, too. Like as not, they put out a description on what I'm wearing.
He knew he looked different without the beard and long hair, but his frayed, homespun cotton shirt was of a kind not widely seen anywhere since most men began turning toward store-bought clothes. It might spark recognition in someone with a sharp eye and memory for detail. Another reason for not taking Buster, aside from the boy's weak condition, was that the notices likely described two or even three men, one of them wounded. Alone, perhaps Cordell would not draw attention. The village probably didn't raid a place on any map. He saw one saloon, a general store, and a blacksmith shop. The small church sat off to itself far enough that it shouldn't distract from business at the saloon. Wind lifted dust from the street, pounded into powder by hooves and wagon wheels. He had to summon willpower to ride by the saloon without stopping. The fewer people who saw him, the better. Saloons produced more idle gossip than a barbershop. Cordell pulled up to the hitching rail at the general store, dismounted, stepped on the porch, and walked in. The general store offered a variety of smells ranging from dried fruit to leather goods to kerosene, but no whiskey. Luther Cordell found only the paunchy graying proprietor and a woman customer who wistfully fingered a bolt of blue dress material.
"I'll be with you shortly, sir. Please feel free to look around while I wait on Mrs. Jones. You might find something you want."
At another time and in another place, Cordell might have wanted Mrs. Jones. She was a pleasant-looking woman, possibly in her early 30s. He had always found the ladies attractive. At one time, he had considered the age of 18 to be properly young. Now, as his own age advanced, he was more tolerant of extra years and experience. 18 seemed barely out of the cradle. Cordell removed his hat and bowed from the waist as she glanced at him. She gave him the merest hint of a smile and quickly turned her blue eyes away. He knew it was only an acknowledgement of his courtesy. Lacking any reason to believe otherwise, he had to assume she was a church-going woman, devoted wife and mother. Bittersweet memories came in a rush, and for a moment he was caught up in a sobering sense of loss, of opportunities not taken, of happiness wasted. He felt envy for the man, whoever he might be, lucky enough to have this woman for his wife.
"The material is pretty, but it'll have to wait, Mr. Arnold. Perhaps the crops will be better this year."
Cordell thought of the bank money, some in his pocket, the rest in his saddlebags. He was tempted to buy the bolt of cloth for the lady, but he knew pride would not allow her to accept such a gift, not even from a friend, much less from a stranger. He watched her go out the door.
"Whew! Not a fine-looking woman."
Arnold nodded, looking over the glasses perched halfway down his nose.
"For now, but a few more years of slaving on that farm, and she'll be wrinkled and gray. Happens to all of them."
"Ooh, that a pity."
Cordell thought of prairie blue bonnets, beautiful in the spring, but too soon dry and wilted. He turned to the selection of groceries.
"I'm needing some coffee, some flour, some bacon."
He watched the proprietor strain to reach canned sardines on a high shelf, then place them on the counter along with canned tomatoes. Cordell fished dry crackers out of a barrel. He thought of Buster.
"Little bit of candy, too."
Arnold took a pencil from its resting place over his ear and pushed his glasses up higher on his nose. He jotted down the prices.
"Anything else?"
Cordell selected an ordinary blue work shirt that would not attract attention and a pair of plain cotton trousers. With those, he thought, he would pass anywhere as a farmer.
"I don't believe I've seen you before."
Cordell was unsure whether that was innocent curiosity or if the storekeeper might have heard something.
"Well, I got kin a little way east of here. I don't want them seeing me in these wore-out clothes. They think I come begging."
"I can understand how they might. The only time I ever see or hear from most of my kin is when they want something."
"Ain't that a fact?"
Cordell considered a moment before adopting the most offhand manner he could.
"Yeah, I've been traveling. I ain't heard much news. Anything happening that I might have missed?"
"Not around here, but east of here there was a jailbreak. Sheriff got killed."
Cordell had feared the sheriff would die, but this was the first time he'd heard confirmation. If the folks back there had been keen to capture him before, they would be far more determined now.
"Oh, yeah. They catch whoever done that?"
"The laws are out looking. They say there was three of them to start with. One split off. The other two was a big man with a black beard and a young man carrying a bullet wound. You might keep an eye out for them. They're liable to be dangerous."
"Mm-hmm. Them kind always are."
Cordell had left his pistol and cartridge belt with Buster to avoid arousing suspicion. Most farmers didn't pack iron, not in this settled country.
"Maybe I ought to brought a gun with me just in case, huh?"
"Best thing is to not let them get that close. Leave them to the law. That's what we pay them for."
"They probably don't pay the law half enough."
Years ago, Cordell considered becoming a lawman, but he decided being on the other side of the fence paid better. Long, hungry days on the run often gave him reason to regret that decision. Even now, he would quit if he thought he could. but too many people harbored long memories. Cordell paid for his purchases.
I keep a pistol under the counter. If they come in here, I'll shoot to kill.
I can't blame you.
That was the attitude most people would take. Cordell felt a chill. The smart thing would be to leave Buster to fare the best he could and get far away as fast as his horse could travel. For a moment, he considered that option. It was what Milt had done. But Cordell lived by a different code. He was ashamed that he had entertained the thought for even a moment. One did not abandon a friend, not if he considered himself a man. He left the village in the same direction in which he'd come in. Once out of sight, he circled back to the grove where he had left Buster. He found the kid lying quietly, half asleep or half unconscious. It was hard to tell which. Cordell set about building a small fire. He saw no water nearby, so coffee would have to wait. Creeks were plentiful in this eastern part of Texas. Surely they would come across one somewhere, and they could camp for the night. For now, a can of tomatoes would take care of thirst. At the moment, he wanted to stop the growling of his stomach. He fried up some bacon in a little skillet that he bought. Cordell considered the irony of his situation. He had saddlebags full of money, but could spend little of it without arousing suspicion. By some people's standards, he was at this moment a wealthy man. Yet he was half-starved and had nothing to eat except fat bacon, some canned sardines, and a few crackers. Besides that, he had a near-helpless kid on his hands. It was a great life, being an outlaw. He would give everything he owned, from the bank money down to his horse and saddle, if he could go back 20-odd years and start over. It would be cheap at any price. Cordell watched as Buster's eyes fluttered, then came open. He speared a thick strip of bacon on the point of his knife and extended it toward his young companion.
Careful now. This might burn you, but it'll give you strength to keep riding a little longer.
Buster took the bacon and made a valiant effort toward eating it. He gave up after a minute and shook his head in futility.
We gotta keep riding? Toward what?
To where it'll be safe for you to rest. Now, come on, try again. You gotta eat if you ever gonna get well.
Buster finally managed to get the bacon down and drink juice from the tomato can. The fever had left him badly dehydrated. He lay back, exhausted.
I wish we could stay here. I do. But there's a chance that storm man will add up something besides the bill. Now we got to keep traveling a while longer, huh?
After a few more miles, they made a dry camp. Next morning, they were traveling by the time the sun came up. By noon, Buster was talking out of his head, and his horse was beginning to limp a little. Soon after they stole it, Cordell noticed it had a misshapen foot, as if it had been injured at some time. He watched dark clouds building in the east, and before long he could smell rain in the wind. He saw a house surrounded by trees and decided to make an appeal to human kindness on Buster's behalf. It worked with Shanty. Maybe it would work here. If it didn't, he could employ persuasion with the help of Samuel Colt. Close up, he could see that one window was broken out and the roof needed attention. A dead garden out back indicated that no one had lived here in a while, though a field to the south had growing corn. Somebody was farming the land. The place had probably been bought by a neighbor trying to expand his own acreage. It was becoming harder and harder for small farmers to survive. They had to get larger or get out.
Hoo-hoo, Buster! I know Lady Luck can turn her back on us, but it looked like she's smiling again.
Buster did not reply. Cordell wondered if he even heard. Andy almost tripped on a spittoon that sat beside the door of the sheriff's office. Above it was a small sign, "Spit before you enter." Tanner and Andy walked in to find the sheriff at his desk, laboriously writing with a pen on a white sheet of paper. He looked up with a frown, as if he resented being disturbed. The pen rolled halfway across his desk, leaving a black trail.
Rangers. I can tell by looking at you.
Andy had discovered that a few law officers were jealous of the Rangers. They shouldn't be, he thought, for chances were that they were better paid than Rangers. They just didn't have the reputation or the aura that seemed to follow Rangers, whether justified or not. Sheriff Shively was a dyspeptic-looking sort with a bald head and a prickly attitude. He drew a whiskey bottle out of a drawer and took a swallow. He put it back without offering any to his visitors.
Sheriff, we're looking for Luther Cordell and two other men. They robbed a bank, broke out of jail, and killed Sheriff Tom Blessing.
Damn Rangers. Always waltz in here acting like they just come from the right hand of God and they know everything. Now I suspect you're fixing to ask me for help.
Me and Andy don't claim to know it all. Just a little here and there.
If you Rangers were half the lawmen you claim to be, that outlaw never would have broke out of jail. In fact, you'd have shot him when you caught him, and he wouldn't have made it to the jail to start with. Shoot first is my motto. Saves time and taxpayer expense.
Peeved at Shively's attitude, Andy didn't bother to explain that no Ranger had been on hand when either the arrest or the break took place. Len did, however, in full detail.
Seeing as it was a sheriff like yourself that was shot, I think you'd want to give us all the help you can.
I knew Tom Blessing. To my way of thinking, he was too easy on criminals. That's what got him killed. Smart lick across the head with a gun barrel is my way of keeping them quiet. And if they raise a ruckus, shoot them. No pettifogging lawyer can bail them out of the graveyard.
Shively narrowed his eyes in speculation.
If I was to help you catch him, who gets the reward?
Andy's face warmed with indignation. About now, a true Comanche would be swinging his war club. But Len shrugged off any such feelings.
We ought to be able to work out something that'd suit everybody.
The sheriff's calculating look indicated that he was mentally counting the dollars.
Tell me what you want me to do. I'll decide if I want to do it or not.
You know the people that belong here. Take a look at any strangers and see if they fit the description of Luther Cordell and the young feller that was with him. Me and Andy can make the arrest.
I'll do my own arresting, damn it. What makes you think they're here?
They was heading in this direction when we lost their trail. They might have kept on going, but there's a chance they decide to lay up on account of one being wounded.
I'll do some asking around. But I don't need no Rangers getting in my way. I'll do this myself.
Now you listen here.
Lynn gripped Andy's arm in silent admonition.
They may not be easy to arrest. We're here to take that job off of your hands.
The sheriff scolded the pair with his eyes.
If I want you, I'll holler. Go sit yourselves down at the Lone Star Saloon and wait. It always looked to me like setting is what Rangers are best at.
A quiet deputy with nervous eyes and the beginning of a beer belly waited until Shively went down the hall before he spoke.
Don't pay too much mind to the way Homer talks. He'd been sour on the Rangers ever since the time he spent 3 hard days hunting a horse thief. Two Rangers was just loafing in a bar room when a man come riding up on his stolen pony, and they grabbed him before he could swallow his drink. Got a reward from the man that lost the horse. They didn't give none of it to Homer.
He wasn't entitled. He didn't make the arrest.
But he'd spent 3 days on the hunt while they hadn't broken a sweat. A thing like that would naturally gall a man.
Maybe so, but it don't alter my first opinion. That Homer Shively is a poor excuse for a lawman.
I get paid to do what he tells me. Homer will still be here when you're gone, and so will I. At least till next election. He's made a lot of people sore at him, so folks may not vote for him again.
Even so, we don't want to take a chance on him making a mistake and letting Cordell get away.
Andy and Len made an effort to follow Shively as he dropped in at one saloon after another, as well as the barbershop and 2 general stores, making inquiry, giving thorough looking over to most of the men he encountered. It became monotonous. Finally, however, Shively devoted his attention to a man sitting in a dark rear corner of a bar room, nursing a whiskey bottle already reduced by more than half. He was a large man with a beard. Shively approached him with pistol drawn.
All right, you stand up and raise your hands.
The man's red-veined eyes had trouble focusing on the sheriff. He made no move to comply.
Stand up, damn you! Keep them hands where I can see them!
He poked the pistol in the stranger's direction.
You ain't no general, and I ain't no soldier. Who the hell are you to be giving me orders?
I'm the county sheriff, and you're under arrest for murder.
Andy saw that this man was not Cordell.
Shively,
Before he could say more, Shively brought the barrel of the pistol down on the stranger's head.
Damn it, Shively, I tried to tell you, that's not Cordell.
Shively gave him a look of disbelief.
Well, he's a big man with a beard. He fits the description.
I saw Cordell close enough to know this isn't him. I hope you haven't busted this man's skull.
He ought to have sassed me. It's his own fault, not showing respect to the badge.
He was probably too drunk to see it.
Shively turned to his deputy.
Get somebody to help you drag him over to the jail. We'll charge him with being drunk and disorderly.
Andy wanted to knock Shively all the way back to the wall, but he restrained himself. Though justified, such an action would probably set off a legal confrontation between state and county jurisdictions and lead to no end of paperwork. Andy dreaded paperwork. Len took Andy's arm and pulled him aside.
Maybe he had the right idea about us taking a sit-down in some pleasant place. We can wait and see what he finds out.
I don't understand how he ever got elected sheriff.
Shively heard the comment and turned angrily.
There used to be a lot of law-breaking riffraff in this county. Citizens got tired of it, wanted the man to get tough. That's me. I get this kind of trash no quarter.
Sometimes the line between lawbreaker and lawbringer was too thin to define, Andy thought. Andy had never developed any particular liking for liquor. He took a beer, but sipped it so slowly that the glass was only half empty after Len had finished two shots of whiskey.
Everything in this world can't be just like we'd want it. You was about to get in a tangle that I wasn't sure you could win.
He's got a good whipping coming to him.
And he'll get it sooner or later. But it ain't our place to do it. Right now, we've got more important business.
Andy felt uneasy about wasting time when Cordell might be using it to get farther away.
Maybe we ought to go see if Shively has pistol-whipped anybody else.
Len showed no sign that the whiskey had affected him. For such a skinny man, he had long demonstrated that he could put away a prodigious amount of food. He seemed to have the same high tolerance for whiskey.
We'd better. He looks slippery as hog grease.
Andy and Len found that, according to the man at the livery stable, Shively and his deputy had ridden out of town.
I told him I'd seen a couple of strangers out at the old Graham place. A big man and a smaller one. Him and his deputy rode out of here like they'd been turpentined. If you're going the same way, it's just a few miles out yonder way.
They quickly saddled their horses while the hostler gave them directions.
Neighbor named Wilson bought the farm after old man Graham died. It's a good house. Roof don't leak. Hardly.
The two rangers rode in an easy lope that would not overtax the horses.
If it's really Cordell, he's apt to shoot Shively's head off.
Then what are we hurrying for? We ought to give him time to do it.
What happens to Shively doesn't worry me, but the idea of losing Cordell bothers me a lot.
They could see what they took to be the Graham house a mile or so ahead. Excitement prickled Andy's skin at the distant rattle of gunfire.
We better whip up!
They pushed their horses hard across the remaining distance. As they approached the house, they saw two men standing and two men flat on the ground. Andy halfway hoped Shively was one of those lying still, but he saw that the sheriff and his deputy remained on their feet.
I'll be damned, they got Cordell!
Hearing the oncoming horses, Shively whirled around, pointing the pistol toward the rangers. Andy instinctively dropped low over the saddle horn. The sheriff might shoot first and check identities later. Shively lowered the weapon when he recognized the two. Andy and Len reined to a stop.
Told you I didn't need no rangers to help me. Looks like that reward is all mine.
Andy thought he should be pleased Cordell was dead, regardless of who killed him, but he wasn't.
Maybe.
The larger of the dead men was lying face down. Andy dismounted and studied him for a minute, then turned him over. He felt his stomach draw into a knot.
This isn't Cordell.
Shively's chin dropped.
What do you mean it ain't Cordell? He's a big man, like you said, and he's got a beard, like you said. You trying to slicker me out of my reward?
Cordell's beard was as black as a crow's wing. This one is brown with some gray in it.
Shively began to sweat.
Then why did he draw a gun on us as we rode up?
What gun? I don't see one.
Andy went to look at the young man, whose lifeless eyes stared up at the bright blue sky. He had seen Cordell's companion only at considerable distance. This boy appeared somewhat heavier, though he couldn't be sure of that.
If this is the right man, he ought to have at least two bullet holes in him. One of them was mine.
Andy knelt.
I don't see a gun on him either.
Sweat rolled down Shively's reddening face.
I swear they was both armed and fixing to shoot at us. They must have hid those guns.
Andy turned to the deputy.
Did you see them aim at you?
Homer said they was. I was busy ducking.
They never fired a shot, did they?
The deputy didn't answer, but his silence told Andy all he needed to know. Furious, he faced Shively.
You wanted so bad for it to be Cordell that you shot first and didn't ask any questions. You just killed two innocent men.
How do you know they're innocent? It's just your word that this ain't Cordell.
Andy heard hoofbeats. Turning, he saw a middle-aged farmer in overalls riding up on a mule. The man gave Shively a quick glance.
What's happening here, Sheriff? I heard shooting.
His gaze dropped to the men on the ground.
Oh, my God! George!
He slipped down from the mule's back and dropped to his knees beside the larger of the two dead men.
Who shot him?
You know him, Wilson?
My brother-in-law, George Blaine. I let him move in here to work this farm on shares. That's his boy Adam yonder. Sheriff, who shot him?
Shively took a step backward.
It was all a misunderstanding. An accident. I thought there was a pair of outlaws.
And you shot him down like dogs? If I had a gun, I'd kill you.
Wilson advanced on the sheriff, his fists clenched. Shively pointed his pistol at the farmer.
You stand back, Wilson. I'll shoot you if I have to.
Andy grabbed Shively's hand and forced the pistol down, then roughly twisted it from the sheriff's grasp.
You've already killed two unarmed men and pistol-whipped another. How many more mistakes do you want to make in one day?
Who are you?
We're Rangers. We got here too late.
Wilson's shoulders slumped. He looked again at the two men on the ground.
Oh, my wife will near die when I tell her. She set a lot of store in her brother. That boy, too.
Wilson turned a furious gaze back upon Shively.
Since you're Rangers, I want you to arrest him for murder. He's lorded it over this county too long.
I was just trying to do my duty. Anybody can make a mistake.
And that reward never entered your mind. Me and Andy are placing you under arrest.
I thought it was them. Swear to God I did.
Andy turned to the deputy.
You better stay here with the bodies. We'll send help from town.
The deputy looked queasy, but he made no protest.
You better not let Shively out on bail. If I see him on the street, he's a dead man.
Andy considered placing Wilson under arrest, too, for safety. But perhaps the farmer would cool down once the initial shock subsided. They presented Shively to the county judge, who agreed that given the many enemies the sheriff had made over the years, he belonged in jail for his own good, as well as for justice. With the sheriff in jail and the deputy still out at the farm, Andy and Len were the only lawmen in town.
Len, you better go get some supper while I watch the jail. I'll eat when you get back.
Len was gone long enough to have eaten two suppers. Darkness had come by the time he returned. His expression was grave.
There's a lot of ugly talk going around. This old wooden jail looks too flimsy to stand up against a mob.
We better slip him out of town before things come to a head.
You need to keep hunting Cordell. I'll take Shively back east to the next county seat and send a wire to Austin.
Andy was reluctant, but right now Cordell was more important to him than Shively.
I'll miss having you with me, Len.
You've ridden by yourself many a time, and you know your job. Besides, I'm getting to where I can't remember which stories I told you and which I ain't.
I don't mind hearing them twice. Sometimes they're different in the second telling.
Yeah, I've got a creative memory.
Andy stood watch while Len brought his horse around behind the jail, leading a second for Shively.
Watch out for yourself, Badger boy. Don't take no chances with Cordell.
Andy felt an emptiness as Len and the deposed sheriff disappeared into the darkness. He took no offense when Len called him Badger boy. It was a different matter when Farley Brackett did it. The judge came around after a while, worried about the possibility of mob violence. Andy showed him the empty cell and explained Len's mission. The judge nodded approval.
You've already done what I was about to recommend.
What do you reckon will happen to Shively?
He'll stand trial before 12 good men and true, who will probably decide he deserves a stretch in the state pen at Huntsville. He'll find a number of men he sent there. They'll be glad to see him.
The judge grimaced, pondering the mental image.
Now, I don't think you and I want to hang around here and face those men when they come. It could be unpleasant. I suggest that we leave the jailhouse door open for their convenience and repair to the Lone Star Saloon for a quiet drink.
Just one beer.
After a day like this one, a beer would be worth its weight in silver. The remnants of a woodpile lay scattered out back. Cordell hurried in with an armload and went back out to fetch more before it got wet. He whittled shavings from a piece of broken chair to get a fire started. Buster seemed to alternate between chills and fever. Cordell rolled Buster's blanket out on the floor near the fire.
You gonna feel better when I get some warm food into you.
Listening to the cold wind driving the rain, Cordell felt a chill. He pulled Buster's blanket up to cover the boy's shoulders.
Can't have you catching pneumonia on top of your other troubles.
He stoked the fire in an effort to heat the room better. He dashed out and brought in more wood, though it was wet now. Stacked near the fire, it might dry before he had to use it. He made coffee and fried some bacon. But Buster showed little interest in it, or even in the candy Cordell bought. The boy lay listless, his face hot to the touch.
Damn it, kid, don't you go and die on me.
The last thing Cordell wanted to see was visitors. But there they were, a man and a woman in a wagon. They drew up near the door. The woman climbed down and hurried into the house out of the rain. The man drove the wagon around back. He unhooked the horses and hurriedly led them to a shed where Cordell had placed his and Buster's.
Oh!
The woman was surprised and a little frightened to see Cordell. He would guess her to be a farm wife in her 30s.
We didn't know anybody was here.
She kept her distance, shivering in her wet clothing.
Now, we don't mean you no harm, ma'am. Get over close to the fire and warm yourself. Me and the boy we just passing by came in out of the rain.
She stepped over to the fire, holding her arms tightly against her body.
The spring rain can be awfully cold.
Yes, ma'am, it sure can.
The man entered the house with obvious apprehension. He gave Cordell an uneasy study.
I was surprised when I saw two horses in the shed. Been a while since anybody lived in this house. We tried to get here before the rain started.
Oh, yeah, you live around here, do you?
A few miles farther on. We didn't figure on the rain. Our name is Archer. I'm Daniel. My wife is Patience.
Archer hesitantly extended his hand, and Cordell took it. The woman had glanced at Buster when she entered. Now she gave him a closer look.
I thought he was just sleeping, but now I see that he's sick.
Yeah, he got himself hurt, ma'am.
Has he been to a doctor?
We ain't been anywhere close to one.
The man knelt beside Buster and pulled the cover back.
Burning up with fever. What happened to him?
Cordell let his hand ease down toward the pistol on his hip, then caught himself. He saw no sign of a gun on this couple. They were farmers and no immediate threat.
He got himself shot.
I'd better not ask you how.
Archer's expression indicated he was making a pretty good guess.
You two are outlaws.
Now, there's some would call me that, but this boy, he ain't one, not at heart. He just got himself misled.
By who?
Mainly me. I was raised better, but somewhere along the line I turned left and I ought to turn right. I'm mortally ashamed for letting this boy follow me down the same road.
I think you're the man we've heard about. They say you killed a sheriff.
Ma'am, I never kill anybody in my life except maybe in the war, and I ain't even sure about that.
Well, it looks to me like the boy's dying. He needs a doctor real bad.
But if I take him to one, he faces a stretch in the pen or worse.
The woman had gotten past her fear.
I think he'd rather take his chances with the law than lie here and die in this miserable old house.
But I just don't see what I can do.
There's something we can do. Patience and me, we can take him to town in the wagon and let you go on by yourself. You could be a good many miles on your way before the law knows anything about it.
Cordell couldn't understand these people. They were willing to help without even asking about payment.
Oh, now you could get into trouble.
We're all human beings. Anyway, the sheriff is a friend of ours.
Cordell turned to the door, working his way through a tangle of misgivings.
Well, you got a deal. I'll harness that team back up for you.
Hurrying outside, he saw that the rain had slackened. He hitched the team to the wagon, then saddled his horse. He decided to leave Buster's here. Buster wouldn't need him. Cordell carried the boy to the wagon and placed him in its bed, making sure the blanket was wrapped tightly around him. The archers followed him out. Cordell extracted a handful of bills from a saddlebag.
Here now, that's for your trouble.
Archer shook his head, and his wife frowned disapproval.
We're not doing this for the money.
Then why?
It's plain to see that you're not a church-going man. If you don't know, then there's no way we can explain it. You better be on your way, Mr. Cordell, if you intend to stay ahead of the law.
Cordell was taken aback by the use of his name. He'd not told them what it was. That damn telegraph. A man couldn't ride fast enough or far enough anymore to get ahead of it. The archers climbed up into the wagon, and Luther watched the wagon move away through the light mist that lingered after the rain had waned.
This gonna be the best thing for Buster. Maybe the law got enough mercy that it won't hang a green kid, even if he does face a stretch in Huntsville. At least he have a chance for a better life once he serves his time. Maybe he can stay on that straight and narrow road I should have taken.
But what if Buster didn't live? Archer said he looked to be dying. Cordell tried to deny it to himself, but deep in his soul he knew Archer was right. It might already be too late for a doctor to save the kid. Cordell could leave here now and get away from the law, but he would never get away from Buster. He would always wonder, did the boy make it, or did he not?
Oh, hell. I never had the sense God gave a jackrabbit.
He set his horse into a lope to catch up to the wagon. The archers looked back over their shoulders. Cordell rode up even with them and asked no questions. He offered no explanation.
You're taking a big chance. From what we hear, the law's looking for you all the way to Austin and San Antonio.
Well, life like a poker game. Sometime you hold a good hand, sometime you don't. You play them as they're dealt, and you hope for gambler's luck.
Or pray for Providence to intervene.